Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute and answer your questions live on YouTube. If you want to help us out, be sure to subscribe to our channel and add us to your podcast feed over on iTunes or Google Play. And if you want to represent TFC, head over to our merch store for t-shirts, stickers, mugs, and posters. You can go to designbyhumans.com/shop/theflutechannel.
We all need sheet music, and we're proud to announce that we're working with Sheet Music Plus, home of the world's largest sheet music selection, and is a proud sponsor of the Flute Channel. Listeners will receive 15% off their order with the coupon code TFC15. So be sure to go and check out Sheet Music Plus for all your sheet music needs. And the coupon is good until July 31st, 2018.
Finally, if you're looking into buying a new flute, be sure to check out the Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. With our code TFC at checkout, you'll be able to try up to 3 flutes or piccolos for 10 days, and whichever instrument you choose, you get an extended 18-month warranty on it. So be sure at checkout to put in the special code TFC at flutesforsale.com. Now on with the show.
So welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
Hopefully you hear us. So yeah, we're going to talk about, answer your questions today. So if you have any questions, please be sure to leave them down in the chat box, and we'll be sure to answer them. And our main topic is preparing for concerts, and I know you have a concert on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you playing again, and where are you playing, and what's the ensemble, and
I'm all that stuff? I'm playing in a beautiful private home,
mm-hmm.
which is it used to be a mill.
A mill.
Lord of the area had to provide a mill for people to transform their grains into flour, and some person bought that mill and transformed it into a beautiful house. And now the lady who lives there, I think his dad was the person who transformed it, and she lives there. She has private concerts there. So I'm mm-hmm. playing with my former piano teacher.
Oh, really?
And it's her concert. I'm just playing 3 pieces during the concert. I'm like a guest.
And you're a guest artist. I see.
Yeah. I'll be playing with her. We'll be playing Morceau de Concours by Fauré.
Mm-hmm.
Then a Nocturne, Chopin Nocturne.
Okay, Chopin Nocturne, yeah.
That, it's an arrangement. And
is it an arrangement you did, or is
it? No, it's an arrangement by Alexa Still.
Okay. Okay.
And then we're going to play Chaminade.
Okay, you're going to play Chaminade. Cool.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's cool. It's going to be a nice little concert.
Yeah.
And the venue's nice too, apparently. So,
yeah. Very beautiful.
That's
place.
So cool. So how'd you, like...
People love going there, yeah. So it's all sold out. And
right. Yeah, it's a thing in their community. You know, those small communities, they really invest in
people,
those little
when
things.
They know there's a concert there, it's sold out pretty fast.
Right, totally. Yeah. And so how...
It's the whole experience, you know?
Totally,
it's
the
music
and
the beauty of the area. And
And how do you go preparing when you do a concert? When you have something like that that you know ahead of time, or... Even, how do you prepare for a concert in general? Are there certain steps do you do? How do you practice? Do you practice?
I practice as much as I can. Right now, I don't practice as much as I would like to because mm-hmm. I don't have that much time. But because I don't have that much time, I try to be efficient, work on the things that are more difficult.
Right, so you narrow down the difficult things that you find that you just need to kind of iron out.
And then I usually do a couple of run-throughs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll usually do at least one run-through that I record.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to it, and I can see what the trouble spots are, what's good, what's not good, what I want to continue doing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of being my own teacher. And also not stopping, you know, doing a
run-through,
as if it was a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And, I try to be in shape. And I mean, I try to do a bit more exercises before,
mm-hmm.
a few days before when I can.
Like general exercises that you like going through?
Yeah, like sound and, you know, just so mm-hmm. I feel comfortable with my flute.
Mm-hmm. Now, and, you wouldn't, some people, they... They might want to just practice as much as it can just before the concert to somehow,
you know. I also want to keep my energy.
Yeah, you want to keep your energy, right? So,
well, maybe not the day of, but I could. It's just I'm really busy right now. So, you know, I try to tell myself, I practiced so much in my life. I used to stress a lot if I didn't practice every day a lot. But now I can't, so I have to live with that fact. And what I try to tell myself is, it's part of me, you know? And I think sometimes when we have habits that help us, they might help us in the beginning, and they might be... they might get in the way eventually if it becomes a bit like superstition, that you need to do that in order to play well. Because we have those beliefs. We create those beliefs that, oh, if I want to play well, I have to practice 2 hours a day. If I don't, I'm going to fail. And if you repeat that to yourself enough, you're going to believe it and you're going to fail. You know, it's self-fulfilled prophecies. I try to be careful that the habits I create are really helping me and not handicapping me or making me forced to do those things or else.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I try to have that self-confidence really from within and not from external things.
External forces, maybe. Yeah. Like,
just be confident that I know how to play the flute.
Yeah.
And I do my best. You know?
Totally. That's very interesting. Yeah.
But I still practice.
Yeah, you still gotta practice. Yeah,
there's still the good. No, it's not.
Oh, the confidence. No, your skills.
I practice.
Yeah, yeah.
First, I practiced a lot before, so I have skills, but also I practice still. I don't go to a concert and say, oh, I'm so good, I'm not gonna. No. I don't do that. I'm always prepared. I prepare.
Right.
Well, but
are there some,
but I don't have those preconceived ideas of what prepared means. Like, if I'm ready, I'm ready. I'm not gonna make a big deal because I didn't practice 2 hours a day the week before, because it's life. You know, I'm in a part of my life where time is rare. There's been parts of my life where I had a lot, and I'm sure that will come back too. It's just you know.
Do you make a mental checklist sometimes before doing your, you know, practice session or before a concert? Like, oh yeah, I remember I did this in specific parts of pieces, or do you do anything like
oh,
that?
Oh yeah, but just I guess normal memory, you know, of remembering how I play things. But I write stuff on my music too.
Okay.
Let's say I listen to myself.
Like little written notes, like on the paper,
yeah, maybe I'll write like color because I want to change the color there. Maybe I'll write transparent, or I'll write, or you know, I write a lot of stuff. I write some of the piano, like for people who watched just practicing, sometimes I write piano things,
To like listen to the piano,
what's going on there, sometimes
something interesting is going on there between the two ensemble,
This way I know where I am,
right?
It's easier to be together, like even if I make a bad note the first time I'm learning the piece, I'm gonna write it down right away so I don't have to go through that every time. So because I write a lot, I think it makes it more efficient.
Good. Well, if anybody has any questions about how to prepare for a concert, if you guys have any more questions for Emily, we'll answer those throughout the podcast for sure.
Yeah. I like practicing. Yeah. I would love to practice more. But I do all types of things. I play with a tuner sometimes. Sometimes I put the drone and I listen, you know, the bee, and then I play with it and try to be in tune. Sometimes I play with my piccolo, my flute piece, and then I take my piccolo. Sometimes I, you know, the other day it was late. I just practiced without making noise. And I was very tired too.
You were very tired.
Oh, maybe I'll practice this way today. I try to switch it up and they think, okay. And when I practice, I try to think, okay, what's the challenge in this part? So I try to practice with a goal. Because it's just practicing to practice.
Goal-oriented practicing.
Yeah, you know, okay, here, mark them off. Difficulty oh, yeah. would be intonation. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to take out my tuner and check my intonation there. Or
sure.
here, difficulty would be breathing. Let's see how where I'm going to breathe and let's practice that. Mm-hmm. And focus on that thing.
Yeah.
Or here it's technical. I'm mm-hmm. going to practice that technical part. Oh, this passage is difficult. How can I group it so it gets easier? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just a grouping thing. If you group right. in... The other day I had a student who had a difficulty with a passage like that. I said, just group it like that, like two groups of the same thing. And then she was like, oh my God, it's so easy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a little... I tried to find ways to be efficient. Mm-hmm. But goal-oriented practice, I think, is... And the same way when I do a run-through, the goal is to practice the concert experience...
Cool. Prokof Flute wondering why the quality of the video is so great. Well, thank you. We're just trying new stuff now. It's same setup, it's just little subtleties, little differences here and there. But we're tinkering with that. Also, I know there was a great question at the beginning. I know Expel Beast, he couldn't be. He or she, I forget. We'll be asleep while the podcast is going on right now. So they wanted to know, how do the both of us practice Tafanol and Gobert? And what do you find is the best way of progressing with technique exercises? From their experience, technique is the hardest thing to see any sort of rapid progress. So is there any methods you use to ensure you're improving? So hopefully you guys caught that.
Okay.
Well, Tafanol Gobert. Tafanol Gobert, which is this book here. This guy, and that's Gobert, and that's Tafanol. And these are exercise books. You can get them, it's, I think, even now free online on IMSLP. It's public domain. But you can also buy the book. It eventually rips apart. But they are pretty good in that manner to leave articulations right at the top of this one, like EJ1 here. I don't know if you guys can see it, but at the very top, there's also articulations there. I used to go one or two articulations at a time, like not at the same time, but I would do two of them each day, and then I would move on to the next ones and then go on until there's 10 and then rotate again. And then I would put metronome markings at something very slow, like 60. And then after, let's say, I think a week, I would increase it to 10. So I'd go to 70 or 75. And then after that, I would go to 80, 85, mm-hmm. to about 120. And then go back and forth. Even playing them slow again, going back and playing slow is really helpful. But that's just the one exercise. And in this book, there's a lot of those. And I would follow that same sequence with all the other exercises when I could. But yeah, it's marking down, tempo marking is a good indicator that you're improving because you're getting quicker, faster, meaning you can understand it better in a certain way. And that's how I did. I did it by how it was told in the book. I was never told to do it other ways until much later with different articulations because Michel Dubose also added more articulations, added more things that... improve that method, I guess.
Okay.
That's me.
Well, personally,
I was a good little student, I guess.
Yeah. To improve technique, I would recommend not going through the whole book, but really picking
mm-hmm.
EJ1, mm-hmm. and working on that until it gets better.
What does
the goal with technique, what it does is that you're learning motives that are going to be used in music, in actual pieces, in repertoire later. And you're learning them in all the keys. So uh-huh. you're playing a piece in any key, or your brain already knows
those sequences. Yeah.
So that's the goal.
Yeah.
But if you do the sequence just once and then you go to the next day you change, you're not mm-hmm. really building. Yeah. So what I would say, if you want to improve, it might look counterintuitive to play only one exercise for, let's say, a month, because you say, I want to improve fast, so I should do all of them. But no, you focus on one.
For me, like I said, I would focus only on that one. And then had the time.
Oh, I know that's what you did.
I move on to other pieces.
I thought I wanted to make it clear to people.
Oh, yeah, totally. Because it's very clear.
The person in the question says that they're motivated at getting good fast, I think sometimes when we want that, we might go too fast, you know? So with some of my students, I even say like two or four lines for a week, but really create automatism, you know?
Yeah.
Make it automatic. You go, you know, you don't have to think about
it.
Every note. It becomes a motive or a word.
Mm-hmm.
Or like your phone number or...
Yeah, you know? It just becomes habit.
A habit that...
And there's a lot of... That whole thing has sequences and other exercises of broken things.
That's what I would do.
It's really learning
that. Same thing
with
scales, you know. You pick one or two. Let's say a major and a minor. You work on them all week, every day, 15 minutes a day. And don't be shy to repeat. People sometimes think that if they repeat, it's because they're not talented, because they should get it right away. No.
Not at all.
No. I repeat too, you know. Sometimes my students think, oh, is it normal that I have to repeat that thing 20 times before? I repeated stuff hundreds of times in my life. Hundreds of times. And I still do. When it's difficult, I have to repeat it again and again and again and again until it becomes this, you know. I had a teacher who said when she missed something, she would go and practice it until she felt impregnated with it. You know, it's part of her body. It's part of her cells. You know, it's part of...
Yeah.
So I think it's the way to practice technique. And then you can play with different rhythms, play with different articulations, as you said. And and the metronome is a very good tool as well. But I would say really work on one thing, make it... Of course, when you're really tired of it, go to another one and come back later.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, totally, if after 2 weeks you're tired of the first one, go play the second one. 2 more weeks and come back. And also the brain works that way.
Yeah.
Because you have two types of attention. You have the diffuse and you have the focus. So when you're working on it, you're on focused mode. And you can't be in that mode that long.
No.
After a while, you get tired. You stop. You go do other stuff. And it's still working on the back burner of your brain. That's diffuse attention. So you have to find your balance between doing too many things and not really, like, you have to focus on it, but at one point you have to also let it work in the back and come back to it later. Like, as a teacher, I can see that a lot, that we do something, sometimes we let it rest, we take it back a little bit later and we relearn it, and it's good now.
It's good now.
Sometimes the brain needs to just
Well, the brain needs
do its
the rest.
Own thing in the back, you know.
Totally. Yeah. So hopefully that can help help you move forward with your technique. Matthew Gelderman, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. What tips do you have for leading a flute section? Cool.
In a band?
I guess in a band or an orchestra, like, you know,
orchestra,
between three or four people.
Just two, 3 people. It's...
Oh, you're still leading. If you're first flute, that means if you're leading, you're technically first, right? So you're listening, making sure other people are doing their part. For me, it's that. When I was in marching band or lead section in a wind band, it was that. If you were first, you kind of have to make sure everybody else knows their parts. If they have any questions, you know, help each other out. You know, if there's... That's what I did. That's the general thing about that.
I guess
for
you don't
want
to be too bossy.
But it's not about bossiness. Like, it's about just... If anyone has a question, you ask that. You kind of start a conversation, like, "Hi, everybody." And if you're doing sectionals, you know.
Well, if you're conducting a sectional, it's different. Yeah. But if you're playing in the group, you don't have much. I always felt in orchestra, you don't have that much time to talk. Like, you're usually silent, but during some breaks, sometimes you would say, but it doesn't even need to come from the sometimes I was first flute and the second flute would say, oh, you want to practice that part, check if we can be more in tune in that part, or
yeah, it's those also, types of things, that's leading in a way, you know,
like, and also I felt leading, especially in band when I was younger, I felt if you're first, people tend to rely on you, so you have to make sure you count well.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to come with some assurance, you know, some self-confidence, because if you come in unsure, the whole section sounds unsure, because
yeah.
everyone's kind of looking at you, oh, is it there, is it there?
Exactly.
So I felt like it was more leading by example,
mm-hmm.
in a way, than telling people
mm-hmm.
when I was in band,
right.
when I was first. And even I remember a conductor telling me that, you know, you're first, you have to be sure of yourself and come in, because everyone's just
mm-hmm.
relying on you.
Yeah, relying on you, exactly.
Huh. So that's how I see it. But yeah, sometimes during breaks, and
yeah.
also telling others, oh, you sound good.
Yeah.
To make everyone feel good and then play better, and I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those types of, that type of advice can really, that type of advice can really help, for sure.
We played together in orchestra, and...
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I...
But it was pretty natural, like, we didn't have...
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, those are general things, I guess. We are getting a little bit of feed cut out sometimes, so if you guys, if this is your question that we're answering and it cuts out sometimes, try to also come back to our podcast on the actual podcast on iTunes, because we're recording it, so it's new technology here, folks. We're trying to make things work, so but yeah, hopefully that answers your question. It's really kind of like you were saying, the watered down version of it is basically if you're first and you're leading the section, you kind of have to know all your stuff, and everyone sort of relies on you a little bit, and I always wanted to make sure everybody knew what they were doing, and if they didn't, we would work it out. I would play the parts with them and stuff like that, and yeah, when it's like one band, you have like
breaks,
six or seven people,
you know,
yeah, I mean during breaks, you don't do it during rehearsals, you do it after post or
yeah,
before
yeah.
concert or before rehearsal, you
and
talk to the
did
people.
You have to rehearse to make rehearsals with the section.
Yeah, you have to make your own
yeah.
rehearsals with your sections.
Because okay. we didn't have
sometimes
to
woodwind section, sometimes woodwind section or flute section alone for, it would be at least 2-3 times a month like that for 25
okay.
minutes, 30 minutes alone. So yeah, that's your job. If that's your position, then you just work it out. You work out parts and make sure things are tight, and always be friendly. You know, never knock down people. Everyone's there to learn and have fun as much as you are, and that's
yeah.
what it mm-hmm. This also goes to another, you're good. Polytail Magic also wants to know, what are some tips for going into an audition? I have one coming up for marching band camp. Well, it depends what you're doing, what you're auditioning on, but really in general, just I don't know. What would you think? I think you got to know your parts, obviously, but don't be afraid. Don't feel negative that if they tell you to stop halfway through your piece. You know, I know when I did stuff, they're like, okay, that's enough. Thank you.
It's
that's
not
the
a bad sign.
It's not a bad sign
no.
at all. No.
It's just they don't need that long to know your level.
If you're doing a live audition or whatever, yeah. Practice your parts slowly. If you have a couple weeks left, delegate how much you have to play for them. If it's only 1 minute of stuff, practice in front of people, so you can get some of that fright out of you.
Yeah,
do mock auditions, mock things like that, like mock
yeah,
performances.
That's a good
that really
idea.
Helps, I think.
Because I remember someone saying that, and I agree with that. For me, it's the same thing. It's as if I had a basket of stress, and when I practice,
uh-huh.
or when I do a mock audition or a mock concert
uh-huh.
or stuff like that, I empty my basket of
uh-huh.
stress. This way, when I get to the actual event, it's more empty.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do our best, and we
yeah,
play
we
music
do our best,
and
don't think of it as a if you don't think of if you don't make it, that it's a failure. It's not at all. It's you accomplishing something by going out there and doing, practicing something and making something the best you can at that moment.
Plus, you know? All those things make you practice, so they make you improve.
Yeah, like maybe you're always improving.
When That's I was true. Doing competitions,
good point.
I was always thinking, I win or I don't really. I practiced a number of hours that I might not have practiced if it weren't for that competition, mm-hmm. because I had to get ready for it. So I always saw it as a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how we learn, you know?
That's how we learn.
We learn through experience. Yeah. So we need to experience things and find what works for us.
Yeah, it's part of that whole experience of...
But also visualize yourself succeeding. Yeah. It's a good thing. That's true. I'm not saying like visualizing yourself getting a letter saying you're accepted or something like that. I'm saying visualizing yourself playing with confidence and succeeding. Mm-hmm. The same way divers visualize their dive before they dive.
It's true.
And they say if you visualize yourself not succeeding or hurting yourself, mm-hmm. don't dive. You have to re-visualize yourself succeeding. That's for me, it's a good I do it.
Yeah.
And even like before that concert, once in a while I look at myself, like I imagine myself there playing, being confident, being mm-hmm. happy. I try to it's kind of a habit,
because mm-hmm.
whenever I think about those things I have stress, I'm like, okay, and I take a breath and I visualize myself being there, happy,
right,
confident, all those things, because I've practiced those things willingly, you know, so now it's kind of part of how I do things. Yeah. I don't even realize I'm doing it sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it became a second nature. Mm-hmm. But at first, I really worked on those things. I know I've talked about that book before. It's called In Pursuit of Excellence. It's a book about sports psychology. I read that and I did all the exercises very, very... I was almost religious about that for a few months. And mm-hmm. really, there's a before and after for me with that.
Mm.
And with time and distance and things like that, I think it gets better and better.
Yeah. And I encourage, like we just said, also just practicing in front of people, practicing successful run-throughs with somebody else around beside yourself, or recording yourself. Mm-hmm. That way you don't stop because it's recording you and you don't want to hear you stopping. It's like you said about the divers. Divers also just practice diving, and they dive, and being exposed to diving as well. So being exposed to
But there's been a lot of studies as well of can people, help.
Both they've amazing. They've
done studies with sports teams.
Oh yeah, and they visualize the win or they visualize the play. No.
They took a sports team. They divided in three groups.
Wow. Okay.
One group was only practicing. I think was basketball. Only practicing. Yeah, yeah. Another group was doing half practicing, half visualizing. And the third group was only visualizing themselves play basketball. They would do all the movements, but in their heads. So running and dribbling and shooting, all those things, and visualizing everything, but not actually doing it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they already had some good level. They were university level, so I'm not saying it's always... But... During that time, the people who improved the most were the people who visualized themselves. Mm-hmm. Because when you visualize yourself, you don't practice bad movements. And your brain, the same regions of your brain are being activated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an esoterical thing at all. Because it's really those parts of your brain that are activated by movement are also activated.
Mm-hmm.
But you're learning the right movements.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps you out. Now I have to brush my teeth with soap, so yeah. I want to know, can you play the bass flute? Yeah, we play the bass flute. If you check one of the videos, you play bass flute, but bass flute's very similar to...
We don't have one.
We don't have one, though.
It's expensive. Yeah. One day we'll buy one. Yeah. It's also heavy. It's heavy.
It's heavy for some, yeah.
For totally. Me, it's heavy.
It's not a tuba, but yes. It's heavy.
But you don't hold a tuba the way you hold a flute.
No.
You just leave it there, the tuba.
Totally. Yeah. Matthew Geldman wants to know... Oh, goodness. Here he goes again. Okay. So, I have it down to a science right now. Maybe you can hear us continuously. That'd be pretty sweet. Okay, so, whoa, not that. Don't do that. Heyo. So, yeah, Michael Gelman also play. What does he say here? He says, I play piccolo as well as flute, and I have trouble controlling volume with the leading section. It sort of sucks. For them. Do you have any tips for piccolo volume? Oh, piccolo volume.
Does he play too loud?
I guess so. I guess that's probably... He has trouble controlling the volume. Yeah. That's a thing, because some piccolos are student piccolos and, like, not professional piccolos. Once you go over a certain break, once you go over, like, say, F, you know, or no, you go past, like, I forget what notes are, like, yeah, E and F, those things suddenly get louder in pitch, like, louder in volume, you know? You just can't escape it. But once you get more professional model flutes, it's actually piccolos, I mean, yeah, sorry. They're much more finely tuned. But, yeah, that's a trouble. That's a troubling thing, you know? Especially in wind band, and you're the only piccolo player, and then you suddenly have to play high register stuff, and it just... shrieks over everybody.
Yeah,
those high register
maybe
ones,
you're overblowing too.
Yeah,
that is maybe you're not supporting enough air,
the support
and just
is one
sending
thing too.
A lot of air, and maybe you can send a little bit less air but have more airspeed.
Yeah,
and more
yeah,
because sometimes we mix a quantity of air and speed of air. Maybe you need more air speed, but you can close the hole a little bit and send a little bit less air. Maybe try that.
Yeah. Practice piccolo by yourself as well too, because I remember when I was a kid, the only time I played piccolo was in band. I never had time to actually go and practice piccolo
and
anywhere.
Also, you can do the same sound exercises you would do with your flute. You can do long tones. Like, I would advise to put at least a earplug in your right ear, because it's close to your right ear.
Yeah. And to all your friends on the right.
No, but when you practice
by
yourself,
yeah,
at least.
Yourself, yeah.
And practice sound exercises and really try to see maybe more air speed, more support with the abdominals, but less quantity of air, and maybe a smaller aperture might help.
Right.
Try that and tell us if it's helping.
Yeah, totally. That can really do
a
lot.
But yeah, maybe it's a piccolo as well.
No, but those are all amazing, amazing good tips that you have to analyze that. Like, you have to sit there and analyze what are the tendencies of this piccolo. Because if you have a wooden piccolo, you know, like with any instrument, they have tendencies. Figuring them out and getting them under control.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's part you and part the piccolo. So you guys have to find a middle ground. Because
if you're scared it's not going to get out and you,
you then
overblow,
then
of course it's going to be...
Yeah, totally. Now, there was a question in the comments on one video recently. And they wanted to know tips for beginners for playing piccolo and then switching to the flute at the same time. You know, like switching back and forth.
Okay.
What would you do? You think? I think it's the opposite's harder. Like, going to flute to piccolo is harder, but when you start on piccolo, I think my flute sounds better.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's kind of funny
that
way. When
I start on piccolo, I sound better on the flute after.
Yeah.
It's only, you know, it's the size, I think, for me.
Okay. I see.
You know, when I go to the osteopath, sometimes I fall asleep there, and then I have to go home, and she's always like, "Do you drive?" And she says, "If you're driving, make sure you put your feet on the ground, and make sure you look far in the distance before, so you really ground yourself."
Uh-huh.
When I change from piccolo to flute, it's a bit the same feeling that I have. What I mean is,
right,
it's different distance, you know, so I really have to ground myself, like feel my body. Okay, where am I now? Okay, I'm here. Just this little split second of coming back on earth.
On
like
earth,
it's a different set. It's a different setting. So sometimes it's the size or the, you know, just calm down, just, okay, that's where I am, and then just that little second to get back on, oh, where am I? That's what I feel when I do it. I just need that. Because you're here and then you're there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's an interesting way. Yeah.
Because I've played pieces where I had to switch from
me too, yeah.
piccolo, alto, and C flute.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Likewise.
And
yeah.
I even had little movements to do. Little dance.
Yeah. I would always, like, for me, I always preset myself whenever I'm going to the next one. I guess, like, lightly blow in it so I can be like, okay, I screwed it up right there, but I'm not playing the note yet. Now, fix it again, and now it's going to play
Sometimes
well.
Sometimes you can't do that, though.
I know. But that's what I do when I have that split second of time.
But I put my mouth in the right position. Like, I can't blow in it, but at least I...
No, I don't blow in it to make a noise. I blow in it just like to get that sensation back. Yeah. And it resets.
Yeah, it's the sensation.
Sensation reset, you know?
Maybe it's just a practice like anything else.
Yeah.
If you have a difficulty with a transition, you mm-hmm. practice that transition. It's funny because when we learn a piece and a student has a difficulty, let's say they miss up a... Let's say they have... B and A, and they miss the A, and then they start on the A, and I say, it's not the A that you had difficulties with, it's going from B to A. We never have a difficulty with one note, we have a difficulty with a transition. Mm-hmm. In life, what is difficult usually is transitions.
Transitions, yeah.
Always. Mm-hmm. And in music, and maybe if you have a difficulty with transitioning from one instrument to the other, maybe that's what you should work on. Mm-hmm. Just, you take the bar... or two bars before you switch, you play them, you take the other instrument, you play the beginning, and you do this 10 times in a row, and maybe you do that 3-4 days, and it's gonna get easier. Because we forget to practice transitions, but that's what's difficult, so let's practice that.
That's it. Huh. So hopefully that answers your question there a little bit. Nathan Hyun, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, how do you play even triplets, sextuplets, or septuplets, much like in like Chaminade and stuff like that? How do you practice, or how do you play them evenly?
Then you can put a metronome.
Metronome can really help.
And then you can use numbers.
How do you use those numbers? You mean like the numbers as in, oh, the numbers on a metronome?
No. Oh. Let's say...
like triplet, but that doesn't work really anymore.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Would you recommend internalizing like that first? Like doing this internalization before picking up the instrument?
I used to do that a lot. I used to sometimes just sing the rhythms in my music with a metronome.
Cool. Yeah.
For me, it's... you know, when something is difficult, I try to just take, how do you say that, remove it from the context and just take that part and then put it back in context.
Right.
Because maybe it's a lot to learn the notes and the rhythm and all those things at once. So... taka 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, taka 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1. And then you know you play it, or ta 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 ta. Maybe my first one was not even, but I think the last ones were even.
Yeah,
so you practice them and you go one from. But yeah, I would practice just solfège, you know.
Yeah.
Solfège rhythm, ta 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 ta, stuff like that, and sometimes counting them.
Can really do that.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, ta, ta. Yeah. That's helpful.
Very interesting. So hopefully that can help. Hopefully that's a little guidance there for you. I think Candace Kane wants to know. Well, first, the first two octaves of the piccolo are the same. Are they the same fingerings as the first two octaves of the flute?
All the fingerings
are the same. Yeah.
For piccolo and flute.
Flute. Yeah. Also, they are also having trouble with playing 16th notes while playing different pitch notes, although they can easily do it on the same note.
It's because maybe you have trouble moving your fingers fast enough.
Right. Yeah. Or the flute's not working. But yeah, mostly the fingers are really where it's at. Yeah. Yep.
Because it means you can't tongue fast, but you can't move your fingers fast.
As fast as you're tonguing, yeah. Yeah. Synchronizing the tongue and the fingers, you know?
Maybe you just need to practice slowly.
Yeah. And slow practice.
Take your metronome and go tick, and then go back up one, you know? And then when you get to your max, you go back slow and you come back, try to get a bit faster and you do it slow again and you alternate between slow and fast, and you try to push yourself a little bit. And sometimes also when you want to, sometimes if I have a big passage of fast and I can't, my brain's not able to play all of it fast, but right. I want to challenge myself to play a bit faster, I take one beat at a time that I play very fast. And then I stop, another beat very fast. I stop, another beat very fast. So it would go like, ta-ga-da-ga-da-ga, ta-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da, ta-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier than going ta-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da-ga-da nonstop.
Totally.
My brain has a little time to pause, see, okay, that's the next word I'm going to have to say. Okay, let's say it. So maybe.
Right.
I guess it's the fingers. Because if you can tongue the notes, you understand the rhythm and everything.
That's
it's
it.
Probably just the fingers are not moving fast.
Before we go to our next question and finish off the rest of the live show, I just want to let everybody know that we have a new sponsor, which is sheetmusicplus.com. Until July 31st, you guys can, if you guys need sheet music, they're the largest sheet music supplier and chain in the world online. And if you go to sheetmusicplus.com and
they
use our,
they
do have Tafanel and Gobert. They do have everything. They have everything.
They have
it's crazy.
That's
They've
amazing.
Got everything. And if you go there and you check out with our code TFC15, that helps us out, and you get 15% off your purchase.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's pretty awesome. So you can check all that information.
Again?
That's sheetmusicplus.com.
Sheetmusicplus.com.
Yeah, they're the largest in the world. They're pretty cool. And you can get all that information in the description box below if you're watching this live or watching this video on YouTube. Also, we're proud to announce that starting tomorrow, if you go on the theflutechannel.com website, we'll have a page on the front page opening up the studio, the online studio, for one-on-one lessons with you, Emily, or with me as well.
Or with you, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So that information will be available tomorrow on Saturday. And if you want to be part of the studio, or if you want to take even just one lesson, you just fill out the form on that page. There'll be a thing that says the Flute Channel Online Lessons. You go there and then fill out a form. And then once that form's sent to us, we'll email you, or you can email us after you fill out the form at info@theflutechannel.com, and then we'll be able to get things rolling. We know you have a couple people already. Oh, you have the one person right now that you've had lessons. He's had a lesson with you for almost, what, 12, 13 lessons already?
Oh, yeah.
A long time since January.
Yeah, every week.
So, yeah. So you guys can definitely check that out tomorrow on theflutechannel.com website, and you'll see if you want to be part of the studio or if you want to take one lesson on a piece with Emily for an hour.
Or with you.
Or with me. And, and also, if you guys really want to help us out as well, we have our Patreon.com website, which is, Patreon is this thing that goes around on YouTube with a lot of different YouTubers that you can donate a certain amount every month. And that helps us produce more of this type of content. It also just makes us be able to do this all the time one day. You know, we do this as much as we can with the free time that we can, but we would love to do it more, but there's that trade-off, right? So yeah, you can go to patreon.com/theflutechannel, and you can donate as little as $1 a month. That's $12 a year. And that pushes us further to get to making this something we can do all the time and be helping you whenever we can.
And also, if you want to come in Montreal and meet us this summer and play, just listen or whatever.
Yeah, there's another way.
There's a flute festival.
Yeah, there's another way to also hang out with us, and that is the Montreal Flute Festival. We're in our third year, and
you can meet the amazing
Alexa Still, and can meet all the other amazing people that come from all over the world.
Last year we had someone from Germany.
Yeah.
We had
people from the United
States,
people
Canada.
From Canada, and it was very cool. A lot of fun. This time it's 3 days long. It's $250 for the 3 days to cover the your tuition. And yeah, you can go to montrealflutefestival.com and go to the sign up and sign up today. It's August 15th, 16th, and 17th. And yeah, so if you guys want to come and hang out with us and play some flute or just listen in, bring your flute though, no matter what.
Yeah, because sometimes people change their mind. They say,
totally.
Oh, I'm not going to play, I'm shy. And then they realize, oh, they're relaxed. Yeah, maybe I should play it. Yeah, so bring your flute.
Exactly.
Make sure you bring it.
Yeah. And there will be a concert on the 17th as well, and it's going to be really fun. And it's all day flute. And it's a lot of fun.
And it's a beautiful city.
If you have never been to Canada.
Especially in the summer.
Yep. If you've never been to Canada or if you've never been to Montreal, this could be a great opportunity for you to go and also visit the city.
Yeah. And if you're looking for a flute, there's the New York Flute Center of New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's also the Flute Center of New York, which is at flutesforsale.com. And if you're looking for a flute anywhere, and if you're looking to buy a flute, you should definitely try them out. Or you can go on their website and try up to at least 3 or 4 flutes if you use our code TFC, and you get free shipping on these flutes to try for up to 10 days. And once you choose the flute, you get an extended warranty to 18 months instead of 12 months.
That's great.
And yeah, so use our code TFC. You can also call them as well, but you can, like I said, reach them at flutesforsale.com. They have the largest selection of flutes in the world. We're dealing with people with the largest sheet music collection in the world, and we're dealing with people with the most flutes in the world. So
yeah, they have used and new. They have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you cannot escape all this wonderful things that you can get from helping us out that way and working with these wonderful, wonderful companies.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win for everyone. So yeah. So yeah, back to the questions. So how do you double tongue good? I double tongue all the time. When I was walking on the street waiting at the bus, I would just go dugga 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 or taka 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 taka. You know, I would do all the different variants. There's not many. And over and over, you know. And then I would put on practice on my flute. All those types of things, you know.
Yeah, that's a very good tip.
That's my tip.
I did a lot of that too. Taka 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 taka. And also backwards. Kata 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 kata.
Oh, that was Dylan Morgan that asked that question. Sorry, I had to say that.
And another thing is when you tongue, simple or double, don't move your lips. Keep everything steady. You don't need to move your lips to tongue. There's no way it goes just... Because sometimes people overwork and start moving everything.
Right.
And then you lose your sound. And there's really... It's easier than most people think. We usually overwork because we want so much.
Totally.
But... It's easy. You just go and add the tongue, but no movement. Don't start eating potatoes, you know?
No.
Your lips have nothing to do with the tonguing. Just...
Yeah. No potatoes. Totally.
Taka 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 ta, and that's it. But practicing it like taka 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 ta is a very, very good trick. And both ways. Taka taka ta and also kata 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 kata. Kata 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 kata, and then taka 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 taka. It gets easier when you do it on the right way after. Same with triple.
Right.
Kata 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 kata, and then taka 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 taka.
Yeah. So hopefully that helps. Yeah. How? Okay, so we got 3 more questions, I think. We're gonna start from here. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Let's see. How do you get strong tonguing on low notes? So how do you get strong tonguing on low notes? That's from Dylan Morgan again.
Okay. Okay. I thought there was a second half.
No. This is good.
Well, I think what I do is I try to anticipate a little bit because the response time when you play in the low register is a bit slower because you have to fill up a longer tube. So I try to anticipate a little bit and go, you know, but open the mouth a lot.
Yeah.
And not cover the hole.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes we go like this and we cover the hole.
Yeah, we always have that
tendency.
Lower
our head to say, I'm going to play a low note.
Get it right in there, yeah.
But then you don't have the right angle for your air.
Yeah.
So I keep my head the same angle and then.
There's a bit of physics to it, a little bit. Yeah. You don't want to go, like you said.
Yeah.
Totally. So hopefully that helps, yeah. I agree.
And then just a good tonguing and a lot of air, you know. And the air has to be a bit slower in the low register than in the. So I think anticipating might be the way to go. And when you practice, don't be shy to crack. That's how you're gonna know where the limit is. You have to test the limits when you practice. If you never test them, you know, you won't know where it cracks.
Right.
Like kids test the limits at home with their parents. It's better than testing at school or testing at the restaurant. It's always better to test when you're practicing.
Totally. Mm.
And yeah, missing something is a good way of learning. You're like, oh, I missed it. Why? Let's try to miss it again and see what I did. Oh, now I'm going to do the opposite of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a, you know, have that type of open scientific mind when you're practicing of a researcher, you know, trying to figure out things.
Oh, we lost it again. I had a feeling it was going to happen. I'm going to fix that. It's a new problem. Well, it's a new computer.
We'll get used to it.
Well, I'm going to use a different thing later. But it's fine. We got right to the end of the question, I think. But if you guys didn't hear any of your answers fully, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or on Google Play. That's where we update and put the full audio podcast. You'll have the whole thing. Exactly. Yeah. No interruptions. Full audio experience. So going back to that strong tonguing thing, also Ash is wondering, how do you improve on high notes?
We have a video about that.
I know.
It's a video about high notes. Yeah. I think it's called High Notes.
But I would evolve on that. Like I would say, I don't even think there was a thing about like to do long tones on high notes as well. You know, like to make high notes really kind of, I think for me high notes should be this thing that's nice and sustained and very, you know, even if it's short, it has that energy inside it. Yeah, it has that vibrant thing to it. That's how I always think of it.
Yeah, like something brilliant.
Yeah, but something brilliant. Yeah, totally.
Shiny, you know. But yeah. That video has a lot of good tips. I talk about harmonics.
It does. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff
about,
in that.
I think I talk about airspeed. You need more airspeed in the high register than in the low register.
Yeah.
You can use your head as a resonance case, kind of, you know?
Exactly.
And sometimes I visualize the sound coming out from the top of my head, like, oh, and it goes out there. It helps me to bring everything back, and then there's more resonance. I open more in my mouth, and I don't know, it sounds better. I think airspeed and also visualizing everything under you. Don't ever visualize notes that are above you, because then you might try to send the air up, but the flute is under you. So sometimes that's something I see.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
But I don't know if you watched that video, but you should watch it, because we had a lot of good comments.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on there. Well, not even good comments, just there's a lot of good content in that, for sure.
And there's one about getting rid of air in the sound.
Yeah,
and
getting
I think
rid of air in the sound.
It can also help.
It can be applied.
Sound quality is sound quality.
Yeah, sound quality. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And our last question, and just before that, thanks everybody who's like answering as well to some of the questions in the comment section, because that really helps us. And some of the people really, it's good that the community is answering for each other and starting conversations that way, and people even become friends and stuff. It's really awesome. So thank you for that. Last one, and that goes kind of back to our beginning topic of the show, which was about practicing for a concert. And that's what are some advice on dealing with stage fright or being nervous? And that's from Cassandra Hernandez.
Okay.
A lot of people get nervous.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, huh?
Well, it's a topic that a lot of people talk about all the time, because it's a constant thing. I would say it's top three.
It's very, you know, for quality of life, it's
but it's a natural,
it's an important thing.
Yeah, and it's a natural thing. It happens to everybody.
Totally.
It's a natural thing. It's not something that you should be
ashamed of at all.
And it's just a process that you actually have to get through.
And I think
some people hide it very well on stage.
In a way, we're lucky. I always thought I was lucky in a way to be a musician and to have to deal with that stage fright, because I had to do some type of inner quest, you know, to find a way to deal with it.
Yeah.
That I thought maybe if I was not doing that in life, I wouldn't have had to go through that. And I think I know myself better because of it, you know. So
totally.
I totally think.
Sure.
The stress is not a bad thing in itself.
Huh.
we always, in our society, we think stress is this bad thing.
Right.
That, but no, stress is a survival signal, you know? That's what made us able to survive. And what if you impose a little stress on an organism and it it can get through it, it's gonna get stronger, you know, the because it adapts, and then once you can adapt to something, you get stronger and stronger. So it's a good thing, and it's normal, as you said. You don't have rabbits going in a circle looking at other rabbits. The rabbit in the middle would think, what, they want to eat me? So it's normal. Everyone's looking at you, or you're going to be judged. But I think the thing is to try to see things as a kid. If you've seen a kid play, or remember when you were a tiny little kid playing and your parents would look at you playing, you didn't even notice them. You wouldn't, or if you noticed them, you would never think, what are they thinking of me? Maybe mom thinks I'm not playing right with my toys.
Sure.
Maybe dad thinks my ears are too big, or you know, whatever. You don't have that as a kid. So you're just focused on the moment and doing that thing and just playing with your toys. That's what I try to do. I have no control over what people are thinking. What do I have control over? The notes, I try to bring my mind back to what notes I'm playing, being in the moment, breathing. And when my mind goes towards what people are thinking, I try to be disciplined and bring it back.
Okay. Yeah. That's very...
But that's a discipline you can work on if you meditate also. Like mindfulness meditation is a type of mental training where you learn how to let go of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to identify to your thoughts. They're just...
Mm-hmm.
Going by, your brain makes hundreds of thoughts a day. It doesn't mean you should identify to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then with time, by letting go of those things, you gain more control. Like it's this weird, and you know, it's ironic in a way that when you let go of things, you gain more control. And when you accept that you have no control, in a way, you get more control.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a bit ironic, but that's how I feel, and I think that's how it goes. And I talked about that before, but cardiac coherence, it's a way of breathing. If you check on YouTube cardiac coherence, you'll find some exercises. You breathe in through the nose 5 seconds and out through the mouth 5 seconds. It's a good way. And all types of sports psychology can be applied to music very well. It's the same visualization, as I said earlier, and breathing and being in the moment, and you know, what can I control and what can't I control, and focus on what you can control and let go of the things you can't.
Yeah,
it's a good way of
it's a very bold philosophy for sure, for people to adapt.
What can I control? I can control preparing myself for the concert. I can control I can decide to hold on to a thought that's hurting me, or I can let go of that thought that's hurting me.
Yeah.
I can judge myself, or I can just accept myself. I can, you know, I have control over that. I don't have control over someone not liking my dress, or thinking I don't play well enough, or thinking whatever they want to think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have control over that. I just, you know, so I think.
I think that's something for sure to look at. There's like I said, if you're starting out as a musician, you know, make a lot of opportunities for yourself to play in front of people so you can understand the whole thing that is performing in front of people. Even if it's just for three people in your house, it's very much like if you were in front of 1,000 people.
And the more you do it, the more natural more
exposure
it becomes.
Yep, the more exposure when you're just starting out makes you comfortable, but also put away those nervous tendencies that develop if you don't, because it's sort of unknown because people are afraid of that unknown type of thing, or what people are thinking, but also
saying is very interesting. In a way, you're saying the more you play in front of people, it's a job like another job. In a way, if you do if you start a new job on your first day, you're going to be nervous. Yeah. But after a month, you're going to be, oh, I'm used to my new job now. Yeah. But I remember...
It's like when you shoot your first hockey puck in a net, you don't know what the heck you're doing. And especially if somebody didn't even tell you what to do.
If you play once but a year, you won't...
You won't improve. But if you shoot every single shot, you're going to know...
Yeah, and playing in front of people is a different training as just practicing.
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
I think...
Yep. Totally.
I remember Patrick Gallois. I was doing a summer workshop with him, and he said he was making his students play a concert every month because he said you need to play a lot to become comfortable on stage. And he said I think he played many concerts a week, maybe two. He said like two concerts a week usually at least. And when he took a break, let's say he would go on vacation for a month and go back, he said the first concert after he went back, he felt nervous.
He felt nervous, right.
But when he was doing two or three a week, it was like going to work like any other work.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing too.
So yeah, hopefully the answer is, whoa, we just got cut off again. But maybe you can hear us still.
No, maybe it's time to finish.
Yeah, one more second. Let's see here. Why is it doing that? I've got it down to an art form. There we go. So hopefully it answered that. If you didn't catch the end of that, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or on Google Play. One final question. I'll just finish it off very quickly. Somebody else wanted to know, what is the best flute brand? Yamaha, Azumi. I need this answer because I'm going to change my flute and I want to get some great flute. Well, like I said, if you're looking for a flute, go to flutesforsale.com. They have the largest selection of flutes. We also have 10 videos with flute reviews. If you go search on our channel and type flute reviews, you'll see a lot of flutes. All those brands that you mentioned are great, but you can try up to...
Three or four flutes.
Yeah.
Try both.
Yeah, you should try both. With them, they free ship to you if you use our code TFC at checkout online, or you can also call them. But flutes for sale, the number 4 sale.com, and you can work with them and you can try up to them 3 or 4 flutes, have free shipping, try them up to 10 days.
And I think you said that earlier.
I know, but I think the person just came in, so maybe that was that.
Oh,
but,
okay. But the question is really which one is the best?
Well, that's why I say we can't say which brand's best, you know? Like, I think they mentioned, like, they said brands, but I mean, like, I think they mean many brands. They can't label them all.
Yeah, you know? It's tough. No, I think he means between Azumi and Yamaha, which one is best, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Well, I would think, you know... It all depends.
Tough to,
I can't say. Like, Azumi has a lot of great things about it. That's by Altus. Altus is a great flute manufacturer. Yamaha as well, great flute manufacturer.
Yeah.
Try both models that you want with the same budget, you know?
Them all, because I have Yamaha instruments. What I think about them is that they're really reliable, you know, and from one to another, usually the quality is...
They have a Yamaha 222.
The quality is pretty... how do you say that? You know, always the same, always...
It's just normal.
Yeah, so that's even, what I... Whatever, yeah, it's even, you know? The quality is even from one instrument to another, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But I never owned Azumi, but I tried some, and I liked them a lot.
Yeah.
Try the flute and see how it feels and how you sound with it, because it's a personal thing.
And whatever fits to your budget, you know, don't get something that's over your budget. That's another thing. Just try what you can afford. Test them. See how you would feel. If you feel that they're the same, you know, then...
Well, then maybe you have someone
listen to you.
And
exactly.
you play without looking which one it is. And, you know.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of good budget Yamaha flutes, 300 series, 400 series.
Yeah.
The Azumi is, like I said, is good too.
Because we tried some and I think I like them.
A lot of intermediate flutes are very well made, and as long as you keep them maintained and, you know, take good care of them by getting them repadded every couple of years, you've got a flute that's going to last a long time. Maybe forever, you know. So
the best thing is really
try them out.
Yeah,
you know,
call or go on Flutes for Sale or
flutesforsale.com.
Have both delivered and try them.
Exactly. They manage
in
all
the
that
same
stuff
type of budget. You can find 3 different brands,
exactly.
Or, you know,
exactly.
And then try and see what fits best for you.
Totally.
Yeah.
So yeah. So thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being part of the chat. It was a great chat in the chat section, talking to everybody. And we do this every 2 weeks. And next week we'll be just practicing. And I think you'll be doing Anderson.
Oh, Anderson. I have to look at that.
Look at it. Well, that's why it's called just practicing. But yeah, you gotta.
Yeah,
look
but
at
I
it.
Try to.
Yeah. We know.
Sometimes it's very easy. I don't look at it. Sometimes I've played it before, so I just take it back. Exactly. Usually that's what it is. But Anderson, I'm not sure. I'll just look quickly.
Yeah, and we're gonna have some new videos coming out soon. We have some new partnerships and some new review videos that we're gonna be doing out soon. But we've got some really cool, exciting things gonna be coming out. So. Yeah. Thanks again, everybody. This is I'm Nick.
And I'm Amelie.
So we'll talk to you guys later. See ya.
See you.
Bye.